Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. At about 6 p.m. on August 4th of 1889, a fire devastated the downtown area of Spokane, Washington. To make matters worse, there was no water pressure when the fire started because of a faulty pump station. As the winds calmed down, so did the fire, but it was too late. By then, almost all of downtown was gone. Nobody ever figured out what caused the fire. And this lingering question inspired Lena Crow to write her debut novel, Fire Season. It's a riveting, propulsive story focused on three intriguing characters whose lives intersect in the aftermath. They are a banker, a con man, and a woman with the ability to see the future. We zoomed in with Lena from her home in Spokane to find out more about this mysterious moment in the Pacific Northwest.
I live in Spokane, Washington. And after I finished graduate school here, I worked for a summer as a city tour guide. And every tour started with a little history of the city. And one of the things that I talked about each and every time was the Great Spokane Fire. It took place in 1889. It devastated downtown Spokane. And it was really a pivotal event for the city. But a funny thing about it is that nobody can agree how it started. Like, there's no factual historical record. They know where it started, they know when it started, but nobody knows what caused the fire. So I thought that that was an interesting door to walk through as a fiction writer, this opportunity to tell a story that had no real historical answer. Like, it sort of made it like an easy entry point to writing historical fiction. And so I decided that I would try to tell the story of somebody who tried to make use of this fire to benefit themselves, but wound up not succeeding. Originally, the novel was just about, or it wasn't even a novel, it was a novella, and it was really just about Barton, and then that was unsatisfying, and I wound up adding in the other characters and the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm. What was it that wasn't working when you were originally writing it?
Yeah, well, Barton's not a likable character. He's not somebody who you want to root for, and I think that it's hard to have a piece that only tells an unlikable character's perspective with no other access point to the story. And so when I got through with having told what I thought was the story, I was like, this just isn't, like, why? Why did I want to tell about this guy, you know, trying to rob his own bank and then ultimately getting, doesn't work out so well for him. So I thought about who else could be involved in the story, and then that opened the rest of the narrative in a way that I think ultimately works much, much better.
Mm, yeah, most definitely. Barton's nemesis is this con artist named Quake Achenbacher. That has got to be one of the greatest character names ever, in my opinion. How did you come up with it?
I wish I could remember. I have no idea at this point. I liked the idea of having a character who had reinvented himself under the influence of an earthquake in some way. And I thought that the name Quake was cool, but that's all I can remember about that.
You did a remarkable job of taking the reader inside the mind of a con artist, inside Quake's brain. How did you do that?
Oh, thank you. I feel like he was the most fun character to write by far. And it never really occurred to me about whether or not it felt accurate, you know, and I think that's sort of the luxury of writing about a kind of person in a period of time that very much does not exist anymore. I mean, we're very much living in an age of con artists, but I think they're quite different from Quake. So he was a lot of fun to write, and I felt this freedom in him, but it is nice to hear that he seems accurate in that way. I think that there's just something about the human desire to take what there is to take that's very accessible. We all probably feel that to a certain degree. And Quake is just, you know, he's just kind of an id. Like, he sees things and he wants them, and he doesn't feel any compunction about operating with his own best interests in mind all the time.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Yeah, you mentioned he was the most fun character to write about. He was also, I thought, the most fun character to read about. So, yeah. Can you tell us a bit about the relationship between Barton and Quake without, of course, revealing any spoilers?
Yeah. So I had this feeling when I wanted to expand the novel and was thinking about who else's stories I could tell in this setting. Barton sort of makes himself into a con man. He's been a very respectable person. And then the fire opens up this door where he feels like he can get the better of people. So he's like, now I am this person who does crimes. So he's like, if you have one con man, why not have an even connier con man? Somebody who's going to just show up and do all the cons way better. So that's what I wanted from Quake, was this guy who's going to be totally smooth. So he shows up to con the original con man, which isn't quite what he does, but he's Barton's undoing ultimately. And I don't really like a nemesis relationship, you know, when it's a pure, like, this person is against this person. So ultimately, Quake ends up sympathizing with Barton. And there's kind of this rocky friendship, even though they are in an oppositional position the whole time they're interacting with one another. I wanted that complicated nature because I feel like that's how real relationships in the real world most often are. Is there's a, you know, if you're a person at all, you almost always find empathy for the people you're around, even when they're driving you bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. We got to talk about the third main character in Fire Season. Her name is Rosalind Beck. How would you describe Rosalind?
Yeah, she is a sex worker in Spokane Falls at the time of the fire, who is a lifelong alcoholic, really sort of a down and out person, but she's also in possession of magical abilities that she's really been using just for her own survival up until the point of the fire. But much like the other two characters, after the fire, the chaos that it causes her situation forces her to make some changes, and she winds up using her magical abilities to ultimately, she becomes the ultimate con man and gets the better of both of these other dudes.
Besides giving us this very entertaining and propulsive novel, within that, you also explore the greed and misogyny of the American West back then. How were you able to weave those themes into Fire Season?
Oh man, I think that, you know, just as a woman in the world, I'm kind of always thinking about greed and misogyny. I think that writing about the era when the book is set and writing about it from a woman's point of view, because ultimately I do think, even though, you know, all three characters get their sections, Rosalind is the protagonist, it's impossible to tell her story without looking at the role that men have in her life and how what she has to do in order to live the sort of life that she wants, and how much easier everything would be for her if she was a man. You know, I feel like that's an element of the time that I was writing about, but it's also an element of now. It's an element of everywhere all the time. So, you know, that never stops being the case, I don't think.
I want to ask you about a short story you wrote called Sinkhole. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Sinkhole is a piece that I wrote a number of years ago, part of a fundraiser here in Spokane for a local community arts center called Spark Central. The fundraising event, it's called Lilac City Fairy Tales, and they did it for a number of years, where local authors would write these short poems or stories all on a theme, and they'd be compiled and then sold for this fundraiser. And so I wrote Sinkhole for that, I think in, I want to say, 2015. And then after that, it got picked up by Pacific Northwest literary magazine called Moss. And from Moss, it was then optioned by, the film rights were optioned by Universal and Jordan Peele's production company, Monkey Paw. So hopefully they're going to make a movie out of it, which is pretty cool for a short story that I thought wasn't going to have a life beyond this little local fundraising event. But Sinkhole tells the story of a family that has a sinkhole in their backyard. The sinkhole turns out to have this magical power where anything that's dropped into it reemerges fixed. And then the question becomes, what happens if you put a human into the sinkhole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great story. And if my facts are correct on this, you got to choose who you wanted to buy the rights, didn't you?
Yeah, there was a bidding war and there were several offers, which was really cool, especially because I have no prior experience with film or television or having anything auctioned, frankly. So yeah, it was a very exciting introduction to that world.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose Jordan Peele and Issa Rae?
Well, I just thought that based on the work that they've done prior, I'm a big fan, and I thought that they were going to make something really cool out of it. And also that it would move the story beyond what I had written in a really interesting way, you know, because the work that they do is so different even from the genre that I was writing in. I thought it would be cool to see the story have a life so far beyond anything that I could have intended for it.
Mm-hmm. I think it will be indeed, because the story is something special, and you have those two masterminds working on it, on your work. So I think it's definitely something to look forward to, and let's hope that it happens. Lena Crow, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Fire Season and Sinkhole as well.
Oh, thank you so much, Deb. It was nice chatting with you.
Lena Crow is the author of the novel Fire Season. Find out more about Lena and her collaboration with Jordan Peele and Issa Rae at WPR.org/beta.
I think Pearl Jam has always been pretty straight on and confronting grief and trauma in a way that seems very healthy, and I think it's helped to sustain them over the long haul.
Coming up, music critic Stephen Hyden on how Pearl Jam outlasted their grunge-era superstardom, controversy, and tragedy to become one of today's most dynamic live bands. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.